south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's start out today with this really interesting and eminently cancelable email. This comes from Felix. He says, Johnny, as a Hispanic man born in Colombia who came to Los Angeles, USA at 9 years old, and a guy who travels back and forth to my hometown in Colombia at least once a year, I have to say I do feel bad for white people. I've never been mistaken for a white guy. I'm a tan guy myself. But for whatever reason, I can walk down the street in the US wearing a shirt that says Brown Pride. And blacks can have BLM hats and t-shirts and no one will make a negative comment. You'll even get a thumbs up or a high five. But if you guys, you white guys, wear a shirt that said white pride, people would spit at you and call you racist Trumpers or Klan members. I don't get it. Then he says, funny though, in Latin America, you can wear anything you want. A Confederate flag, a Trump or Castro hat, a Pablo Escobar narco t-shirt, even one littered with swastikas. In fact, I see there's lots of fake Harleys in Colombia. It seems like there's all kinds of imports coming from China and India that copy Harleys. Pretty good copies, too, and half the cost. From a distance, you can't tell them apart, but close up, you sure can. When I'm in Colombia, it seems every week there's some kind of motorcycle run where you see lots of these fake Harleys. And there's always a few riders wearing German World War II helmets, even swastika patches. And people think they're cool. You can buy them all over the place in trinket shops. In Latin America, Colombia specifically, which I know so well, the only people that'll call you out for that kind of stuff are American white people tourists. Sensitive American woke people. It's hard to admit, coming from me, a guy who migrated to the United States from bad things in my country, only to realize as an adult that in my adopted country, things have gone very wrong. Good thing, though, and it's very fortunate that those backward steps do not translate well to Latin America. Then Felix says, by the way, Johnny, I saw a recent Latinx article in the Los Angeles Times. It was the story about how a lesbian Latina woman, or whatever she calls herself on the spectrum, from Colombia, was transplanted to Los Angeles as a child, just like I was. And she's complaining now in the Latinx news about Latino cultural sexism. She, or whatever her pronoun is, pointed out that with salsa, rumba, tango, and Latino dancing in general, it's a firm rule that the man always leads and the woman follows. He seems to think we must change all that because it puts women in an inferior, unequal position to men. He says, I couldn't believe they would print something like that. She was making a big stink about nothing. Aren't there more pressing problems in the world to devote your time to? War, poverty, pollution, malnutrition, human trafficking, fake vaxes? What's happened to logic and priorities? I'm with you, Johnny. The USA is turning into a big cesspool of stupidity. Only in America, not Latin America, could people get away with complaining about things like that. If in Colombia or anywhere else in Latin America you were to bring that up, in a club or disco or on a dance floor, they'd think you made a bad joke and escort you out of the building. And my American friends in Los Angeles wonder why I'm spending more and more time in Colombia. Signed, Felix. P.S. Johnny, I'm in the clothing business. I saw a really great t-shirt in the Free Zone in Cologne in Panama. I could wear it in Latin America all day long, but I could never wear it up in the States, or I'd be lynched. Even as a brown guy, I'd be lynched. So what's the t-shirt say? It says in big letters, Black Lives Matter, ... but only after they're born. In smaller print, it says, Black women have 38% of abortions, but make up only 14% of women of childbearing age. All right, thanks for that, Felix. Yeah, you're right. You'd be nuts to wear that shirt in the U.S. You'd get lynched. By the way, Felix, I don't know how long you've been listening to this show, but a couple of years back, I was talking about how Latin Americans in general vastly prefer any kind of t-shirt, sweatshirt, jacket, sweater, hoodie, whatever, as long as it's got English sayings or letters printed on it. Just come on down, take a look around, and you'll see for yourself that out of every, let's say, 100 t-shirts or sweatshirts you see people wearing on the street, or even when you walk into a clothing store. Just one or two of those clothing items out of 100 will be in Spanish or have Spanish lettering on them. And all the rest will say something in English. People down here don't want Spanish sayings on t-shirts. They want English sayings, whether they understand the meaning or not. Come on, suppose you had a t-shirt with French sayings on it. I don't think an American would wear it in public unless they knew the English translation. Could be embarrassing if you didn't. And since down here in Latin America, maybe only 1 out of 50 people, I'm talking when you're off the tourist trail, that is, speaks good enough English to understand what it says on their t-shirt, that speaks volumes for the gringo wannabe nature of the society itself. It definitely reaffirms your gringo advantage. I know, there's nothing fair about it, but what's fair in this world, you know? But let's face it, if you're going to have a plan B, and you all should have a plan B, I know only maybe 2% of you will ever go through with the whole thing, but that's beside the point. You still keep listening, right? Nothing wrong with having big dreams. Anyway, if you're going to have a plan B, wouldn't you much rather have it in a country where they like and admire gringos and expats? Or would you rather have your plan B in a country where the people just tolerate us because of the money and tourism we bring in? All right, let's take another email, this time from our man down under, Ben. He says, G'day, Johnny. Mate, in answer to your question a little while back, yes, you do repeat yourself a little, but only where necessary, and not to a point where I'm yelling at the radio, shut up, Johnny, we've heard all this before. The balance is still pretty good, in my opinion, he says. Then he says, here's a few topics I'd like to hear you bang on about, if you haven't already. Number one, obviously, some of us are slower to get our plan B into action than others, but that doesn't mean we're not keen to get the ball rolling. What are your thoughts about foreigners buying rental property in Latin America with the idea to live in it eventually? Clearly, he says, you'd want to be 100% sure that's the place you'd want to end up living in. That way, though, gives the buyer the opportunity to lock in a property at today's prices. Having said that, what do you see the property market doing over there going forward? All right, Ben, let's dive into that one before we get on to your other questions. First off, Ben, after knowing lots of gringos and expats who decided to become landlords in Latin America, I'd have to say, for most of them, it turned into nothing but a headache. But then again, most all of them never ended up living in that place. They just did it as an investment to make some dough. They became landlords to have a steady income. That's the point, right? You know, there's always headaches involved with being a landlord. It's even worse in Latin America unless your clients happen to be first world expats and gringos. That way, if you were a landlord up in the States, you know what you're dealing with. Not that all gringos and expats are sterling renters. They're not. There's always a certain percentage of bad payers and deadbeats. The thing is, here in Latin America, there is an extra layer of problems in dealing with Latino renters. Remember, down here, rules are very flexible, law enforcement is weak, and we're on mañana time. As classist, even racist as this sounds, Latinos, compared to Americans, as a rule, are not ideal renters. They're a lot more likely to be deadbeats and slow payers. Even if you own a place in a high-rent area and you're renting to upper-class, even rich or wealthy Latinos, they are slow rent payers and often deadbeats too. So don't be fooled by their late-model cars, their real bling, and even their bodyguards, or the helicopter schools they send their kids to. They're often months or even years behind on paying that tuition. I know a couple of bankers here in Latin America, and they tell me that upscale Latinos, even the wealthy ones, are maxed out on their credit cards right now. In that situation, generally the last guy to get paid every month is the landlord. Do you want to be that guy? In fact, I can't tell you how many deadbeat renter stories I've heard from gringo and expat landlords. Many, if not most of them, regret ever getting into it. They all thought being a landlord was a sure thing because property is so much cheaper down here, etc., etc. But problem number one is it's very difficult to kick out a deadbeat renter. Sure, you'll get 2 months deposit up front, but it's not uncommon to take 6 months or more to get out a deadbeat renter. So again, if it's your intention to be a landlord and rent to locals, even upscale, upper middle class and wealthy Latinos, well, I can put you in touch with some gringos and expat landlords who will dissuade you of that notion. Then again, if your intention is to only rent to gringos and expats, that's another thing. But then you're probably going to be on or very near the gringo tourist trail, which has its other problems. By the way, Ben, if you plan on buying a place to live in yourself and decide to rent it out for a while till you get down, I bet you're thinking about doing the Airbnb thing, right? Well, that can work for a while. But if you're not going to be there, you're going to have to hire a management company because people are going to come in and out for a week or two at a time, and it'll have to be cleaned up, the keys transferred, instructions given to the new tenants, utilities paid, etc., etc. Then, of course, there'll be repairs. I don't know if you realize this, but Airbnbs get a hell of a lot of wear and tear, much more than a long-term renter. You know how people take care of things that they don't own themselves. How well did you take care of your last rent-a-car? I rest my case. Then again, the positive thing about buying a place and renting it out as an Airbnb is that you can make as much money in 1 week renting as an Airbnb than you can make in a month with a long-term renter. But believe me, if you're any kind of detailed person at all, you're not going to want to live part of the time in your own Airbnb, considering the wear and tear and how other people trash it when you've got it rented out. Who wants to come back to that? I've seen it all. Permanently stained sofas and pillows, skid marks on carpets and rugs, moldy, disgusting sinks and shower stalls. I've seen it all. Personally, I'd never want to rent out the main place I live in as an Airbnb. Even if I'm not going to be there for a half year or more, it doesn't matter. I'd rather leave it empty. I don't want to come face to face on the sofa or in the bathroom with somebody else's grunge. Of course, there are ways to make owning a property pay and live there too without facing those kinds of issues. You could own a duplex or something similar. A place that's got a small apartment attached to it. Therefore, you live in the big house and you rent out the smaller one in the back or over the garage, whatever. I've seen that work quite well for gringos and expats. That is, you're living there all the time and the renter's right next door or in the back. That way you can monitor things closely and be right there in his face when rent is due. Now, of course, you have to look at the future. With this economic disaster looming, and I mean disaster, it's not isolated, it's worldwide. I'd say that any plans you have right now for having a success as a future landlord here are dubious. Nothing's certain anyway, but the future is even more cloudy. Though you can be sure there'll be more inflation, less tourists, more layoffs, and more deadbeat renters. That means it'll be getting harder, not easier, to be a landlord, no matter where you are in the first world or third world. Now, as far as the property market here in Latin America, in almost all the gringo tourist areas, it's been propped up and overbought to the max. Though, at the same time, if you look at Latin American internet real estate sites, you'll see tons of properties that have been on the market for over a year. Remember, down here in Latin America, you have to have money down, usually 10 or 20%. And that's for locals who can get a bank loan. Gringos and expats have a very difficult time getting bank loans, though most think they can. Why not? They got good credit up in the States, but when they go to a bank in Latin America, they don't. It's all different down here. Your credit score up in the States doesn't count for dick down here. As a result, when gringos and expats buy land and property, it's almost always for cash. Although, there are many gated, guarded development projects that look like they're just getting started, or maybe not even half full, that will self-finance, eliminating the bank. Projects like that are a great way to launder narco money, you know. So even gringos and expats who put 5% down can get financing through certain property developers. The problem is with high inflation and the economic chaos and uncertainty looming right now. Real estate projects in Latin America are grinding to a halt, as they are up in the States now, too. That's why I'd say right now is not the time to buy. It's a renter's market. As the domino effect brings down the financial and banking systems, there's a big looming real estate crash in the works. There are, of course, desperate sellers out there, but it's going to get worse, much worse. Personally, if I was in the market to buy it, wait a year to see how it flushes out. Certainly, the prices are not going to get any higher. They got nowhere to go but down. Funny thing, too, remember just a couple of months ago, the real estate market in the U.S. and Canada was so crazy. There were thousands of cases where people bid over the asking price. Well, I can tell you these days, except under very exceptional circumstances, we won't be seeing that kind of action again for a long, long time. By the way, that kind of craziness never happened in the real estate market here in Latin America. In all my years down here, I never saw a real estate deal where the market was so hot people lined up like it was an auction and bid more than the asking price. Anyway, it's true, construction here in Latin America is grinding to a halt. There are lots of half-done mega projects that'll never get finished. That's why I say don't jump into anything right now. Rent for a long while before you buy. The fact is, I can't tell you how many green gringos have been sucked into real estate deals they thought were the deal of a lifetime. Somehow those real estate deals of a lifetime never seem to turn out that way. Even a guy like me who's got lots of construction experience and has had 13 or so houses or building projects under my belt. Well, I did some ciphering and put the numbers together a couple of weeks ago, and it turns out I wasn't very good at it. They were all pretty much losing propositions except for the fact that I got to live in them, so it was rent-free in that respect. but as far as building real estate projects and buying and selling real estate. I made money on two projects, lost money on two projects, and broke even on eight other ones. So all in all, building, buying, and selling real estate for me was basically a wash financially. And though I ended up with free rent, all those hours of physical labor and stress, you can never get that back. So when people ask me if I'd do it all over again, I would tell them I would not build or buy a place strictly to make money, to make a business out of it. I'd only build or buy a place to live in myself. My objective would never to be a landlord either, though maybe I'd have an apartment out back or a guest cottage to rent. That would be an afterthought if I needed a small, steady flow of income, not my main objective. After all, isn't part of the reason of having a plan B, moving down to Latin America, isn't it supposed to be about lowering your stress, not increasing it? Of course, it all might work out differently for you. And as you get older, you're supposed to get wiser. You'll find out that's not always true. As for me, I still had a lot of fun and learned a lot of things building those places, and I certainly accumulated a huge catalog of stories to tell. And man, do I have a gigantic tool room. It's a good feeling for me anyway, to never have to borrow a tool from anyone. But if I had to do it over, I'd build or buy the house I wanted to live in forever. And even if things changed and I only ended up living there a couple of years, at least I'd get exactly what I wanted and I'd be happy or at least content while I was there. Oh, and one last thing about being a landlord in Latin America. You know, I've met lots of Latin American landlords. When you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, Latin American landlords are the only ones you're going to run into. Well, guess what? Every last one of those Latin American landlords I've run into has been a jerk or an asshole. Not that they didn't start out as nice, reasonable people. They all started out with good intentions. It's just that every last one of those guys has been dicked around by deadbeat renters. They've had their places trashed by kids, pets, excessive garbage, cucarachas. That's why, understandably, many landlords who've been around the block have 3- and 4-page contracts you have to sign. Not that any of it's binding or enforceable, but they do ask for references, banks, and co-signers. That is, unless you show them a big wad of cash and pay 6 months ahead. Anyway, in most contracts, they'll throw in the kitchen sink even if it's unenforceable. That's why, if you're going to rent a place, you'll need to have a friendly Latin lawyer look over your contract and have him be your reference/co-signer, known as a fiador. Then Ben has question number two. He says, Johnny, how do other expats tend to fill their days? I'd like to hear about what kind of local volunteering opportunities exist over there, and do many expats get involved? Well, Ben, that's a touchy subject. I don't agree at all with expats getting involved in local volunteering projects. The idea seems good at first, and it always leaves the kids and the families with smiles on their faces, but it almost always involves giving away free stuff, and that never works out well in the long run. Getting involved in those organizations that give away clothes, toys, food, it certainly makes the expat gringo giver feel good, but the results almost never last. Now, that isn't to say all local volunteer projects are crap or useless, but over the years, I can only think of a very few projects that worked. Like, for example, a beach or a land cleanup project where you take a bunch of kids out on a weekend, buy them breakfast, give them a free t-shirt, and take them out cleaning up garbage on the highways around the beach. That kind of thing actually does some good, and it teaches the kids to have some respect for the environment. In other words, they get taught not to shit in their own sandbox, something Latino parents, even Latino teachers, don't seem to stress, emphasize, or even care about. Anyway, at the risk of repeating myself 1,000 times, if you really want to help the locals, do it on a one-to-one basis with some of the poor kids and families you know that live right in your neighborhood, starting with your maintenance guys, gardeners, and cleaning ladies. And it's not about giving them money either. It's about giving them good examples and values and really useful items. For example, quite a few gringo expats I know helped their cleaning ladies and their families out. Now, the fact is almost all cleaning ladies have kids, unless you've got a cleaning lady or a girl that's 14 or 16 years old, and still, she might have a kid. By the way, I know some gringos and expats and lots of Latinos who have cleaning ladies who are underage, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. And that seems to be A-okay here in Latin America as long as they have written, signed permission to work from their parents. Of course, the cleaning lady or girl has to be up for it too. And they are, because they need the money. Now, I'd never recommend a gringo or expat have a cleaning lady that's under 18 years old. That just doesn't seem right for a lot of reasons. But a lot of times things like that just end up happening. For example, you might have a 30-something cleaning lady who brings her 10-year-old daughter to work quite a bit. She'll come along with her mom, work a little bit, hang out in the kitchen, watch TV, and that could go on for years. And when she finally hits, let's say, 14 or 15, she and her mother sort of become members of your family. Now, that's where you can really help out. I know plenty of cases where gringos will take that young daughter, 12, 13, 14, whatever, put her in a private school, and that'll change your life. The fact is, any private school in Latin America, even one that's 50 or 100 bucks a month, is a huge cut above any of the despicable medieval public schools that poor and lower class kids are forced to go to. So sending your cleaning lady's kid or kids off to a private school is a huge leg up for the family. And it might only cost you 50 to 100 bucks a month per kid. That's one of the best gifts you could ever give. Infinitely better than buying them a bike, giving them clothes, or a smartphone. Though most gringos will do that too. Another fantastic way to help the locals is to give a poor young kid your phone, laptop, or iPad when you're trading on up. The fact is, practically none of the lower middle class and poor Latin American kids have a laptop at home. And since Wi-Fi is everywhere, throughout Latin America too, most people don't even need to have an internet plan. You just sit down in a corner tienda, a coffee shop, a government building, or a public space, and you got free Wi-Fi. Now, for all you listeners who are disagreeing with me about joining a local volunteer group, well, let me tell you, you can find 100 of those groups on Facebook. And every last one of them thinks they're doing their part to save the world. The thing is, though, those gringo organizers and members are mostly short-timers in Latin America. They do good until it feels good, buy the t-shirt, head back home, and bask in their do-gooder glow for a while. Like I said, they all think they're doing their part to save the world, but they haven't been down to Latin America 30 years to see the minimal, sometimes negative, results of their efforts. And though their hearts are in the right place, except, of course, for those organizers, those administrators who are on an expense account and taking a salary, they're the real scumbags. So anyway, bottom line, beware of do-gooder groups with matching t-shirts, because generally they're enablers who do more harm than good. Worse yet, most all of them preach the gospel of wokeism, which makes me want to vomit on their shoes, not mine. That brings us to Ben's third and final question, which is a good one. He says, Johnny, you've recently mentioned you don't recommend Colombia, Puerto Rico, Panama, Mexico, Ecuador, and Nicaragua. So I'm wondering, what's on the country recommendation list these days? Since you started talking about it, I've done quite a bit of research on the DR, and I will continue to do so. It will probably be my next trip. He asks, how did the DR fare with the recent big storms that devastated Puerto Rico and Haiti? Then he signs off by saying, take care, old mate, Ben. Thanks for that. Good question, Ben. Funny thing, you know, about 12 years ago when I first started up this show, out of the 20 Latin American countries, there were only 4 or 5 countries that I said I'd never recommend moving to, namely Venezuela, Costa Rica, and Belize. And then, little by little, I added to that list Colombia, Puerto Rico, Panama, Mexico, Ecuador, and Nicaragua. Brazil's not for the faint of heart either. So then what do we have left? Well, you know, it all depends on how much money you've got, because if you got lots of dough, you can live like a king practically anywhere, even in Cuba or Venezuela. The problem is, you see, since I've started this show, Latin American governments have been voting in presidents who are dyed-in-the-wool socialists. Great example, Colombia's new president. And now, after just a few months in office, the country's really feeling it. There's a great flight of capital and money out of the country. The rich people are going to, guess where? Places like Miami. I bet they'll soon regret that. Now, of course, it's a very individualistic thing, the countries I do and don't recommend. No one size fits all. It's more about your wish list than the money. That's why when I do one-on-one phone consultations, I send a nice, big, multiple-page questionnaire. It's the best way to home in on a good choice of Plan B destinations for you. For example, if your priority is living on the beach and you really like sun and fun and beautiful beaches, I'd say Dominican Republic all day long. Or Roatan, Honduras. Though both of them being islands, they're going to be about maybe 10 to 20% more expensive than living on the mainland. However, in the Dominican Republic, for example, the cost of renting or buying a place is so much less expensive than Roatan, Honduras. That's a definite consideration, too. So although the cost of living in the DR is a little bit higher than living on the mainland, the real estate prices, whether you're renting or buying, are in many cases amazingly inexpensive. That's what I mean when I say you have to consider your own wish list. Now, if you like low cost of living and perfect weather all year round, the Guatemalan Altiplano is for you. And if you live near Guatemala City or Antigua, Guatemala, you'll practically never get bored. There's so much to do. However, the beaches in Guatemala are absolute crap. They're a 2 or 3 on a 1 to 10. Whereas in Roatan, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic, they're 8s, 9s, and 10s. They even beat out the beaches in Mexico by a good margin. You have to see it to believe it. By the way, Ben, you talk about natural disasters and hurricanes. You know that big one that came through Fiona? It hit the Dominican Republic. But for some reason, in the last 40 or 50 years, big hurricanes never hit Dominican Republic with great force. Meanwhile, they've nailed nearby Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Haiti a number of times, doing great damage. Somehow, the DR just never gets hit full force. Some say it's because it's got a mountain range around it, which sort of changes the air currents. In any event, Fiona, the big one that just came through and wiped out Puerto Rico, all it did was knock down dozens of highway signs in the DR and knock out power in a couple of sectors for about 12 hours. And meanwhile, Puerto Rico, which is only about 100 miles away, suffered billions in damages. Now, I also like El Salvador as a Plan B destination. Of course, on the western Pacific coast, on the Bitcoin Beach area. But it's pretty hot there, too. There is no Altiplano in that area. However, there is an area in El Salvador that borders Guatemala called La Ruta de Flores. English translation, the flower route. It's the coffee and flower growing region of El Salvador. A great place to live if you like calm, rustic life. You can homestead there and have your own little flower or coffee plantation. And it's only about an hour away from the Bitcoin Beach areas. Meanwhile, Peru, Chile, Colombia, and Bolivia have elected socialist presidents who promise to tax and punish the rich. Though there are nice places to visit, I wouldn't want to live, own, or invest there. So then what about Uruguay? Well, I just got an email from Jeffrey. He says, what's your take on Uruguay, Johnny, besides being more expensive than Central America and Doug Casey's new location? Do you have an opinion about it? Well, Jeffrey, yes, I do. And you know why it's much more expensive to live in Uruguay than the rest of Central America? Because, unbelievably, about 40% of the people work for government or have contracts with the government. So the place doesn't make much. They have to import practically everything except cement and plastic plumbing tubes. You see, to pay those people who work for government and those service providers, paper-shuffling parasites that produce nothing, they tax the hell out of imports. But the thing I really don't like about Uruguay is, after about 2 weeks being in the place, it becomes the most boring country in the world. It runs at such a slow speed. There's so much mañana time that it seems to me it could be a great place for retired old farts who want to write the great un-American novel. But there's just nothing to do there. The streets roll up at 9 o'clock at night. It's like the Latin American version of Mayberry. Some people are into that, I guess, but I'm just not that guy. Besides that, it's far enough south, so it's got the seasons. So half the year, it's dry, dusty, and cold. I much prefer the Altiplano in Central America, where there's spring-like weather all year round. I'm not much of a beach person myself, except for a couple of weeks a year on vacation. Still, I'd rather live the beach life in Roatan or the DR than have a permanently boring Plan B in Uruguay.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!